Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am so excited to be here. I'm a broken record how I talk about how this is my favorite part of the week. It is. We're 100 episodes deep into this thing, and it's still the favorite part of my week. I love hosting this podcast. I love the conversations that come out of it. As far as I'm concerned, I am the one that benefits the most, because I get to be here for them all. I get to be here for these amazing conversations centered around men's mental wellness. And I get to watch front row as the He Changed It movement is growing right before our eyes. And it is growing. Things are happening. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, what the heck are you waiting for? Please go to your app store, whether it's Apple or Google, we do not care, whatever your persuasion is, head on to those stores, grab the He Changed It app, download it, be part of it in its infancy. Be an early adopter. It's so much fun watching the process of this company and this movement grow. We're very grateful for everything that is happening here. Lots of really good things happening. And if you've been here from the start, you've seen a bunch of it. As I said, I'm the one who is so fortunate to do these conversations and be a part of them. If you haven't subscribed, whether you're watching on the YouTubes or whether you're listening on the Apples or the Spotify's or whatever, please give us a subscription. The He Changed It overlords love that because they see the metrics of it. And please leave us a positive review and a positive comment about what it is that we're doing here. We're trying to make the world a better place, and one man at a time. And the sign off to this thing is go change something. We're trying to show people how to do exactly that. As always, the guests that we have provide insights from their vantage point, how to do this. And I love the guests that we have today. There's a D word that is out there that many folks, especially men, avoid like the plague. They want to avoid it like you wouldn't believe. We've wanted to do an episode on depression for a while now, and haven't really found the exact right confluence of events combined with a guest. Today is that day. We've got a guy on this podcast today who has not just experienced from a very young age depression all the way into his further years of life, decades of dealing with depression, but learned how to manage and live with depression. Many times men don't even like talking about this. The good news is you don't have to talk here. You can just listen or watch as Bruce and I discuss his book. So Bruce Ross is our guest today. He has written the book, Breaking Free of Depression's Grip, A Powerful Success Story. I'm excited because the title is very, very much a title that a man would put on. It's right on the nose, but we're going to ask him if he's got some hidden meanings as well. So the author of Breaking Free of Depression's Grip, A Powerful Success Story, Bruce Ross, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day and your schedule to be on HeCast today.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me on your show. And it's been a great, great opportunity to share my story with other listeners that partake. So wonderful. Thank you.
Well, and it's a hell of a story. As I alluded to, it's a story that has, it's still unfolding to this day. And the good news is it's unfolding in a place where you can take the things that you have learned and you can spread them around now. And I'm so grateful that we are on this side of the story where it is a lot of things that you have learned. That is exactly what He Changed It is all about. I want to go into the fact that 15 years old is when these symptoms, started to manifest themselves in your life. I mean, the word depression, the evolution of what we know about depression in your journey has changed many times over. My gosh, when you were 15, you started dealing with depression. Tell us your story, Bruce, and then we can get into the book and all sorts of other fun stuff. I just want to hear the story.
Sure, just to kind of summarize it. So you're right, Mike, it was about 15 years old and in grade 10, actually between grades 9 and 10. And I started to feel displaced and some of the common symptoms that you now identify as depression. But I felt alienated, displaced, fatigued, just bummed out all the time, on and on it goes. We can explore that later. But that's how I felt. Unfortunately, I didn't have a solid relationship with my parents, and depression, mental health issues certainly weren't on the radar at that time anyway.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what I was dealing with. I just knew something was kind of askew with how I felt. And I tried to deal with it myself for years. And in fact, 20 years, actually. And I just lived every day, just hoping my ship would come in, taking different measures upon myself to better myself, to feel better about myself. It didn't materialize. It was the mid-90s, about 1995. It was actually my wife, Cheryl, who said to me, she said, "Bruce, I think you suffer from depression." And surprisingly, I wasn't defensive. I actually acknowledged that that could be a problem, could be my illness.
Right.
And you know, provide an answer to my what I was searching for, at least to be the cause of it anyway.
So you went a couple decades without even, you know, knowing that you were depressed. You were like a ship with no route. You just no rudder. You had no idea you were depressed at all. What were some of those symptoms that you felt though? Like did you know that you felt differently than many of the people around you? Like, were you aware of that it was different, or did you assume that everybody felt this way?
No, I knew something was wrong. I just knew I didn't know what it was. Depression wasn't talked about at that time. In fact, the only association or knowledge of depression I had, that was the mid-70s, 1970s, was by watching the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson. Ooh. And I certainly knew I wasn't that, so to speak. So I just denied that. And, you know, and as I said, I didn't have a relationship with my parents to open up. So I kept it all within. I just felt very lonely, very isolated. And I felt, I guess to use another movie analogy, there was a movie some time ago now, but Bruce Willis with Sixth Sense, where he's there physically, but not emotionally or mentally. And that's how I felt, just very displaced and very alienated. And I just put on a facade and carried on like put on a mask, so to speak, to conceal the, but I didn't know what was wrong. And as I said, it was the mid-90s that my wife first suggested that it might be the cause. And I wasn't defensive because in many ways, I felt like a prisoner, an escaped prisoner who's on the run and who's finally captured. And there's a sense of relief to know that it's over. And that's how I felt. I just felt as if now I had to get on with life and find a cure, so to speak, for the illness. But at least I knew what I was dealing with. Unfortunately, that wasn't to be. I spent the next 25 years on a journey of trying to solve the depression riddle. And that's where I am today. And we can get into that a little bit later too. But that's really, it's been quite a journey with the professional self-help measures I've undertaken to combat the illness.
You've set the table perfectly for this next question though. Like, it's so interesting how you got to a place of you were sick and tired of being sick and tired, and the idea that you were given, for lack of a better term, a label, but at the end of the day, a name of what it was that you were feeling, and finally being able to kind of submit to that and go, okay. And that gave you freedom right now. And I mean, we're going to get to the next 25 years because really at the end of the day, that realization led you to the starting point, another starting point where to some people, oh, this realization, the weight lifted off my shoulders, you think that's resolution, but really all it is leading you to the start of the next phase. There are guys right now who are in that same spot that have been maybe denying, and I'm not saying you denied it until the 90s when that name was given to you and that weight lifted off your shoulders. But there are guys out there who know that they are feeling different, that know they're feeling off. They know they're wearing a mask. They've got a facade, and they're still fighting the idea of submitting to a label or submitting to a name of the condition. Talk a little bit about, before we get into the next 25 years, talk a little bit about the freedom that you felt, and if you could tell your younger self, if you could go back and scold your younger self to say, hey, submit to this idea, it's going to be faster to leading to right. you feeling better. Is that the type of freedom that you felt when you,
Absolutely. I felt like the pain would be over soon. It would just be a matter of finding the remedy. In the mid 90s or a little earlier than that, I believe, if you recall, Prozac was the wonder drug at that time.
Sure.
That was cutting edge for depression treatment. That was in the folds at that time. So I figured if I take some Prozac, everything would be normal, 20 years after the fact. That wasn't to be. Mm. That's what my family doctor prescribed, and it wasn't to be. And that started the journey of the next 25 years. But I wasn't disappointed or hopeless over the fact that Prozac didn't work. I just assumed there would be some combination of medications or other treatments that would solve the riddle. But as I soon found out, it wasn't to be.
As men, many times we have this idea that we can fix something. Right. There's the stereotype of how we don't listen to our wives. We just want to fix things when the point is we should just learn how to listen to that stuff and don't worry about fixing. But we have sometimes this fix it mentality in our heads where we want to do that. But at the end of the day, and I'm kind of setting the table here for the next phase, for the next 25 years, sometimes things are just a process, and the process is the fixing. There isn't a getting rid of this, taking a wonder drug and getting rid of it forever and letting it being, in the past. Sometimes things like this are present. That it's the friend that's coming with us in the front seat, whether we like it or not. And it's a matter of learning just to deal with that and manage that. Is that one of the major things that you learned over the next 25 years? Like, I know you went on a massive journey. I'd like you to talk about that. Talk about some of the rabbit holes that you went down in searching for the truth that you now know.
Certainly, if I knew then what I know now, at the start of the journey, I just assumed it would be pretty black and white, that I would just Prozac or equivalent would solve the cure or solve the problem, and that'd be the end of it.
Right.
But as the treatment options and self-help measures, many of them that I undertook, didn't resolve the issue, it became a little more frustrating, there's no doubt. But if I knew then what I know now, it would have provided some comfort down the road that it was certainly a journey, and it wasn't one size fits all, but there would be not a happy ending, but a quality ending, which frankly there has been, which I get to at the end of this podcast. Mm. But it's certainly interesting. One point I do want to make, Mike, is you asked about about opening up a while ago. But accepting it. One thing that I know now that I didn't know then, in the mid 90s, is there are a number of men, women too, of course, but men who have suffered from depression, and it's well documented. And if I had known that then, it would have provided me a little more comfort going forward. An example is Winston Churchill, and it's probably appropriate to bring up his name given what's going on in Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
But in World War II, until the US got involved, Britain was essentially on their own in fighting Germany. And it was Winston Churchill who's so admired for leading the country in that. Other examples, Jim Carrey, the zany comedian, he was on 60 Minutes some years ago detailing his bouts with depression. Another example, I mean, there's many of them, but Brad Pitt. I mean, what guy wouldn't want to look like Brad Pitt? But he's opened up about his bouts with depression. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I had known that, back then, it would have provided me some comfort. Unfortunately, I felt like I was very much on my own.
Well, and I think that is a phenomenal marker to say at this point here. If there are guys who are listening to this and they know that they're off somehow, some way, maybe they even have the realization that it is depression. The fact that you are not alone is massive. And I'm so grateful that we got to that early on in the podcast, that there are many, many guys who are dealing with this right now. COVID has exemplified and exaggerated and amplified many of these things. We live in a society right now that is getting, for many men, harder and harder to live in as it's changing so quickly. And I mean, there's all sorts of things that the factors that can contribute to us slipping, biological, environmental issues, life events that happen. You're not alone. You're not alone. And there's a lot of people out there who have traveled down these paths. And one of the clues that gets thrown out there is that you can link arms with some of these people, whether it is through media, like books, like Bruce's book, mm-hmm. whether it is through, men's groups, different things. We are definitely going to try and create more tools with He Changed It for men who are living silently. Please don't live silently. That's not the way to get to a place of curing or managing whatever the end goal is. Dealing with it silently is not the way to do it. And so let's help you get proactive. And that's what Bruce is helping people do with the book and whatnot. So that's a great message. I appreciate hearing that, Bruce.
It's interesting that you mentioned about the loneliness. I can say unequivocally that's one of the most pressing issues with depression. Is you feel very alone. You just feel like you're the only person in the world that has depression. And that's simply not the case. There's something like 280 million people worldwide that suffer from depression. So that you aren't alone, but it's difficult to accept that when you are depressed. You just feel like you're the only person knows how you feel. And that's simply not the case.
Yeah, that's an awful feeling. And so anybody who has got their eyeballs or their ear holes on this podcast, please know that that is definitely not the case. And there are roots to not feeling this way. Bruce, before we get to the next 25 years and some of the places that you went in your quest to managing depression, Candace and her team, as they were building He Changed It, they went out and looked for what they call pain points. That's the that's the terminology they use as to why men's mental wellness is in the state that it's in right now in North America and beyond that, Europe as well, and Australia and everywhere around the world. Like you said, 280 million people. Oh my gosh. Some of the pain points are the ones that you'd think of, family breakdowns or childhood trauma, the things that you would think are stereotypical. But two of the top ones, body image was one. And again, guys don't talk about this stuff, but overwhelming purpose was another. And then overwhelmingly though, number one was loneliness. And that's a huge thing. And if you're lonely, well, that can kind of suck. Yes. But if you're lonely and hurting, like got something wrong with you, man, that is not a great place to be. And that's why we want to definitely encourage people to reach out, to be vulnerable. It's hard to do, but at the end of the day, being able to get rid of loneliness is one of the silver bullets to attacking, things like this. I want to talk about that next 25 years. You went down a lot of rabbit holes, and I don't want to put words in your mouth to talk about it, but you went down the conventional and the unconventional roads as to how to solve this. Can you talk a little bit about the next 25 years that led to the book, Bruce?
Sure. I mean, it was quite a journey, and 45 years and counting it sounds as preposterous as Will Chamberlain stating in his book that he slept with 20,000 women. But it's true.
It's not an exaggeration though.
Wasn't true, but certainly the 45 years is.
45 years.
Yeah, 45 years and counting. So the first 20 undiagnosed, but the next 25, you say, is when I went down this journey. And it started off with family doctors, as I mentioned, who prescribed Prozac. He just prescribed it generically as depression. He didn't go into the types of depression or what type I suffered from, but just that it was depression. Prozac didn't work. Then he escalated to other medications. That didn't work. So then he referred me to another family doctor who sent me on a crusade, essentially, of physical checkups, including a sleep disorder clinic. He sent me to have allergy tests and a thyroid test, because all three of those issues can mimic depression. They weren't the cause or mimic of depression. Mm-hmm. It escalated from there very much so to more medications. It's up to 20 different types of medication I've been on. Mm. I've lost count, actually. Some in isolation, some augmenting one another. And then my family doctor at that time referred me to the psychiatrist that I've seen for 20 some years now. Mm-hmm. And I've been with him, and he's helped me on the journey. In fact, he wrote a testimonial in my book, and it's a chapter devoted to him. Dr. Chandrasena's name. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I went from medications to he sent me to a therapist to have cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT it's referred to, which is a standard procedure or treatment option in conjunction with medications. That didn't solve the issue. Although I understood CBT from a rational perspective, it didn't resonate with me emotionally. Mm-hmm. CBT is just changing your thoughts that may have derived from growing up and false belief systems and so forth.
Yeah, working on your subconscious pathways, right?
Exactly.
I love that stuff. I'm a big Joe Dispenza fan. He talks about that, how rewiring your brain, that is all positive stuff. And again, sometimes these medications work. Sometimes it is the thyroid. Sometimes it is these things. It just wasn't in your case.
The CBT, lost my train of thought here, but the CBT, oh, I know, it reminded me of reading How to Play Better Golf, or a book on how to play better golf. Mm-hmm. You know, I know why I'm slicing the ball when I hit the off the fairway or off the tee, but reading the book, I can't translate that into straightening out my slice. And that's what CBT kind of, but anyway, so my Dr. Chandrasena escalated from there to repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, RTMS, which most people have never heard of. But I went to a center in Toronto, and for 2 weeks straight, I took time off work. And at the center, they put a metal plate to get your head. It's pretty kind of crude, really. And you're awake during the whole procedure, but it directs magnetic impulses into the brain where the depression resides. So I spent 2 weeks there for about an hour a day, and it was all out of pocket. It was, I think, $6,000.
Yeah.
OHIP and my work coverage didn't pay for it. So I think it helped, but didn't last. So that was kind of the end of that measure. Dr. Chandrasena then escalated to the dreaded ECT, electroconvulsive therapy.
Shock therapy.
Pardon?
Shock therapy.
Shock therapy. That's right.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah. I think most people are aware of it. It gets a bad reputation, but it is actually very recognized as worldwide treatment for depression, for major depression.
Yep.
But where they put you under with anesthesia, of course, and hook up electrodes and then shock you into a seizure is what they do. And that kind of jolts the depression out of you, for lack of a better explanation. But Dr. Chandrasena stopped the treatments after a week or two because they weren't effective. So that was the end of that option. And all along this, these are all professional, so to speak, journeys, measures I've undertaken. And I also took a number of treatments or measures myself. I didn't just sit on my butt and look for the professional measures. And a couple of things I did, that exercising reduces depression.
Sure.
So I took that to the extreme. When I was 38 years old, I made a New Year's resolution after a few pops to run a marathon that spring. So on January 1st, I ran 3 kilometers and that was it. And I quickly escalated there. And then by May, I ran the Pittsburgh Marathon in less than 4 hours.
Wow.
And then after that, I ran four.
5 months. 5 months, not a runner. And in 5 months, you're... So, okay, I got to ask this question here because I think it's important to note. Like, I know the answer, but I think it's important for our viewers and our listeners to know. You're also living a normal...
Right.
Successful in many different people's version of the word successful. You're literally living a successful life while you're doing this, while you're going through this stuff.
There's no doubt, but it was a bit of a facade, really. I mean, I won't say phony, but I guess it was. Yes, you're right. I had a career in the financial world.
Yep.
I'm pretty well educated, and I went to work every day and fulfilled my responsibilities and. But the marathoning and preparing for it helped. I also ran New York City Marathon, Chicago Marathons, and two more. When that didn't do it, you know, it relieved the depression somewhat, but it wasn't a magic cure, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then I took up triathloning at age 40. Never had done that before. Did 3 that summer and fairly major triathlons, and the third one I did a month after I did my first one was a half Ironman triathlon.
Oh,
where wow. You swim 2 kilometers, bike 90 kilometers, then run half marathon. So I finished. I did it in 6.5 hours, but you know, again, extreme measures to feel better about myself. Did it work? Somewhat, but it wasn't, you know.
Certainly. And that's I got to talk about that. Like, okay, so you're really unturning every stone that you can, through clinically and personally,
that's right.
Doing everything that you can anecdotally, I'm sure, you know, you're trying everything to try and get this thing licked. One of the questions that I have is, were there things that would give you temporary relief? And during those times of temporary relief, was it like another world? Because I mean, it'd been so long since you have had relief from this. Did you truly during any of those times know what it was like to be relieved of depression, even for a little while?
I would say no. I definitely felt some relief as if the pressure had been relieved somewhat. But did I ever feel quote normal? No, I just knew that there's something missing, but I still trudged on. You know, I still, and people mistook my adventures as looking for the Holy Grail. And I wasn't, I was just looking to feel better about myself. And none of the measures were particularly effective. They weren't, no, they were, you know, most people, they live their lives, you know, up here. I was always down here, kind of below the surface, so to speak, striving to get up just to where they were. I wasn't trying to get up way above. That's not it. I just wanted to get up. So there was nothing I really tried. I took courses to better myself. I obtained my accounting designation while I was working. I obtained my certified financial planning designation. And also at age 55, really the last major self-help measure, I obtained my MBA. And those were all self-help measures to feel better. And I, you know, you asked the question, was there anything that relieved it? They helped, but they certainly, you know, it might have moved me on a scale of 1 to 10 from a 4 to a 5 kind of thing. But where most other people are at are 7 or 8 on that scale.
Right.
Certainly wasn't. No,
I gotta say this right here, right now, and I'm certainly not the first person to say this to you. I am fucking impressed with your tenacity, with your drive. Like, oh my god, that is unbelievable. The achievement that you have made in the name of trying to find a way to break free of this. There's a lot of people who just take their ball and go home. You just say, no, give me another ball. Let's play that one. Let's get, you know, let's do this. So did you get to a point, you've tried all of these things, all of these drugs. I guess one question I'm going to ask is there anything that you, we got to be careful with this. I'm just saying anecdotally, I'm not, you know, neither of us are doctors or anything like that. But at the end of the day, is there anything that you would not recommend? Like, if you could do it over again, would you say, okay, I'm not going to try that many drugs, for example, or I'm not going to go so far down any particular rabbit hole? Is there anything that you would say was more ineffective?
I would say not. They're really neutral. The one I didn't mention, which was frankly was granddaddy of them all, was about 10 years. About 10 years ago, I undertook the deep brain stimulation, it's called, which is, most people are familiar, obviously, with the pacemaker for the heart. Well, this is I was a research candidate in Toronto, one of the hospitals there, for deep brain stimulation for the brain. And what it really essence is a pacemaker for the brain. So they drill two holes in your head, insert two electrodes, and then put a wire under your, you know, skin to your heart or to your chest. And the little electric impulse from the battery is supposed to, you know, that's what the hypothesis is to solve the depression riddle. So it's very much an undertaking because I'm lacking hair on top of my head. You can still see the bumps where they did the surgery. And unfortunately, that was not effective. And so that was, you know, in retrospect, given what I went through, it took three or four years before it was approved for the research. And I was candidate number one. And what I went through and had to go to Toronto, I lived 3 hours from Toronto. It was a huge undertaking to no avail. So if there's one treatment, I probably would question it, for me anyway, it just wasn't worth it. So,
okay. You've like blown my mind. I would say that yeah, okay. That's invasive to say the least. Yeah. And brave though. Like, I'm not trying to make light of it, Bruce. That's fucking brave. but again, that just shows the drive that you have to get this thing figured out. And wow, that's how about you know, you're hearing lots of things right now about what have been considered psychedelics, you know, psilocybin, ketamine, all of these things here. You've gone down those paths too.
Yes, ketamine. It was actually on the cover of Time magazine a couple of years ago as the most promising breakthrough in depression treatment since, I believe, Prozac.
Yeah.
So I tried that, and ketamine, for the viewers, they may have heard of it because it was a hippie drug of choice from the 60s, so it's been around for a while.
Sure.
And also, lately, I think it's been abused as a date rape drug, but it is, when used medically, it is been shown to be effective for depression. So I had that drug as well. It didn't work. It got a good buzz off it from taking the drug because it was intravenously administered.
Right.
And for the hour or so, it was great high, but then it wore off and that was the end of that. So I've been back. So that was another option of the checked off.
Okay, so we've done a phenomenal job, in my opinion here. We've done a phenomenal job of talking about the journey, where it started, the quest and the things on the journey. Now we're on the other side of it. You've got the book out. Right. What are the things that you've learned? And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm going to a place where we're talking about how, okay, this isn't a cure thing. This is a managing thing. This is a thing that's learning how to manage. Is there happiness for the people who are suffering with this that cannot cure it, cannot lick it? Can you, on the other side of things, say that you're living a life that you want to live with fulfillment and all of these things? And let's get to the book.
Well, it's an interesting question because I know rationally I've done well, but I feel like Spock from Star Trek. I just don't feel it emotionally, but I've accepted that fact that there's, you know, I probably will never be quote happy. The rational realization that I've done well, I think is probably the best that I can do. I wouldn't want to dissuade others from, you know, trying to achieve the happiness, but I think I've reached my plateau as best I can do. The book itself, just to add, it was actually a self-help measure that I wrote the book, because I'd read that if you write things that are in your brain, so to speak, onto paper, it relieves the depression. And it was very therapeutic, I found, to do so. And then when COVID hit a couple years ago, I thought there might be a message out there I could share with others, especially with the onset of mental health issues since COVID. So yeah, that's what led me to writing the book. But as far as happiness goes, not sure about that one. I think it's just acceptance of where I am and what I have achieved, which I think has been pretty good. The irony of the whole thing is, a lot of these accomplishments, like the marathons and triathlons, if I felt better about myself, I wouldn't have undertaken them, because I would have been content with where I was.
Oh, that is ironic. That's a chicken egg thing, yeah, right there, exactly. Isn't it?
But every time I achieved a goal, the finish line kept on moving back. So I kept on, I'd look for another goal. The other thing I did, I liked to travel. And so I traveled to all 10 provinces in Canada. Two of the three territories. I still have Nunavut to finish.
Yep.
But I also traveled to all 50 of the United States. So that was kind of another goal I had. But again, once those goals are done, the finish line keeps on moving back and comes to a point where you kind of have to accept it. But it's very difficult to do.
I'm going to get you to hold up the book here in a second. I'm interested in the title, because at the end of the day, we've set a table here, but the title is Breaking Free of Depression's Grip, A Powerful Success Story. So even though you're saying, okay, well, yeah, I don't experience happiness, say, the same way that a lot of people do, but the title of the book is compelling to me, because it feels like from the title of the book, you have crossed the finish line. And I know for a fact you feel that you have crossed the finish line. It's just not the finish line that you had maybe envisioned. And I want to maybe talk about that a little bit. Please hold the book up and tell us about it and where it can be found, all of that stuff.
Sure. So that's the title or the book right there. And it's pretty emblematic, I believe. The runner on top of the mountain has achieved his goal, his or her goal. I think it's pretty positive statement. But the breaking free of depression's grip really is, most people, of course, the word breaking free, suggests a dramatic and immediate shift of from one position to the other. But in my case, it was more of a process of breaking free. So I was able to break free of depression's grip in the sense the stigma attached to depression. I felt comfortable enough with my own life to open up about it a few years ago. So I broke free of that. So that's part of the title. And just breaking free from how it governed me for all these years. I've accepted I have a mental illness, but I live with it, cope with it, manage it. And I believe in my own mind have achieved pretty positive results in my life with my family, with friends, and my career. So those are all positive accomplishments. So I've broken free what would otherwise have held me back with depression. So that's really the title of the book. That's what it's, I believe it's a success story that needs to be shared.
It's inspiring to me. Mm-hmm. It's not like you don't have moments of satisfaction or pleasure or happiness or things like that. Your version of those things are just a little bit different than maybe somebody who isn't, and it's the frustrating thing, or what must be frustrating, is that you don't necessarily see how you're experiencing life, through media, movies, things like that. It's not like it's talked about in a positive way very much this way here. Even the books, like I look, there's not a lot of men that write books like this. I'm certain you must have run into that when you were on your knowledge quest as well. So was that something that you were aware of when you were writing the book?
I was. Statistically, it's been proven, demonstrated anyway, that women are more apt to have depression than men, I think it's 1.6 times. And that's a statistic. But what they don't know is whether or not that is really true, whether or not women have depression more, or if it's simply that women are more apt to
talk about it. Yeah.
So I was certainly aware of that, that most depression books are written by MDs or PhDs, and if they're, you know, which are men and women, but a lot, if they're therapists that, you know, other writers, they're often women writers. There aren't too many men who open up, as I believe I have. I'm pretty candid in the book about what I dealt with. And I like to think it's fairly, I won't say revolutionary, but certainly cutting edge, in the sense that I've been so open about what transpired in the last 45 years, which is kind of ironic too, because I'm by nature quite a private person. But
yeah, the other, by the way, it hasn't escaped me that you know, a lot of people, my wife and I wrote a book, and it's a big thing. It's a big accomplishment just to even get the thing done, just to get across the finish line. It hasn't escaped me that, okay, yeah, you know, you ran marathons, half an Ironman, all that stuff, got your MBA, all these things, and wrote a book all in the name of, oh, maybe this will make me feel better, you know? But the best part about it though, is that, maybe it didn't make you feel better other than that sense of accomplishment, which you have felt in so many other ways, but you are breaking open the dam of vulnerability to show other men that there's hope. Right. And to give you know, concrete examples of things that can be done. Like, you went through a lot of dark times, and I kind of want to know, like to our listeners and stuff, let's see if there's any clues that we can leave them. What are some of the things that got you through the dark times that you have been through? Because it hasn't all been about being as productive as you can and trying to, you know, focus on that solution. There have been some really hard times too.
And there were probably three things that got me through the dark times. One was, I've always had pretty strong ethics and integrity. I'm not sure why or how I got those, except I can only assume through genetic link through my parents. But Martin Luther King Jr. has always been one of my idols, and he had a quote, "The time is always right to do what's right." And I always adhere to that. I felt some comfort in living by that, even through the dark times. That kind of got me through. So that was the number one thing, my ethics and integrity. The second thing that got me through were friends when I was growing up, or, you know, years ago, and even to this day. They didn't know that I was dealing with depression. And for the longest time, I didn't know myself, as we talked about earlier. But there was some comfort that I had friends, kind of an association logic, in the sense that they were good people and they liked me. So that means I must be a good person. So there's always kind of an odd logic there, but that kind of got me through. And then the third component is my wife, Cheryl. We've married 26 years. And we have a lovely daughter, Hannah, who's in her third year, coincidentally, of psychology at McMaster University in Hamilton. And they've been very supportive and a rock for me, a rock of Gibraltar, both of them. And so those three components really got me through the dark times to where I am now.
Let's talk about your daughter for a second here. Time gets slippery, and so we gotta end it soon. First off, I hope this isn't the last time. I feel like our paths are gonna cross again. You certainly have provided a lot of tools for men, and we wanna promote that as well and promote the book. But I just, as we get into kind of the overtime here, your daughter is going through for psychology. Yes. And at what point, you know, so she's in her 20s, I assume, right? Yes, now.
That's right.
At what point did she become aware that you're going through this, and you going through this, does that have anything to do with the fact, like, the journey that you've had, does that have anything to do with the fact that she went into psychology?
Absolutely. It both counts. I tried to shelter it from her as long as I could, frankly. I didn't want to burden her with my challenges. But I did, you know, talk to her probably when she was mid-teens, I suppose, something like that. So she has a pretty good understanding, or did have a pretty good understanding earlier on, much earlier on, what I'm dealing with. And whether or not she, this was a spur for her to go into psychology, it's actually psychology with a concentration in neuroscience and behavior. So it's very much.
Wow. It's right in the same league.
So it's very much in the realm of what I'm dealing with. And that's, yes, it was a great influence. And that's one of the reasons she wanted to go in with into that area of for her career. So I hope she continues on. So that's, yeah.
Well, just another one right there where you're so inspiring, Bruce. And I mean, you know, to the point where you're inspiring, you know, your own kid to do, to move into this and achieve. And I just look at, what you have done. You talk about taking a negative and turning into a positive. Mm-hmm. You look at on paper, all of the positives that have come out of this, and boy, I'm very, very inspired about what I'm hearing here. So thank you for being open to sharing that. Vulnerability is a huge thing with men. You have, like I said, broken the dam of vulnerability and just, it seems like you live there. I appreciate that. As we kind of close up here, my final question for you, it's almost a review, but not quite. It's sort of a sum up more than anything. You got guys right now that are listening to this, and some of them I'm certain are going to be having holy shit moments, where it's like, okay, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. If one of those guys, if you now know that one of those guys is listening right now, what is some of the things that you've learned that you would like to share with them?
A couple of things. I think the underlying component, the basic start is to accept it. There's no shame in accepting it. You know, accept the fact that you have a physical illness as much as cancer is, or diabetes, or other physical illnesses. That's what depression is. Accept it, so then you can move on. You know, that's number one. No shame in it. I once, never mind. So that would be number one. Number two would be to stay strong and remain hopeful, even though it could be a rocky road down the way. Now, I say that, you know, knowing full well that one of the underlying characteristics of depression is losing hope, but you have to stay strong and remain hopeful. And number three is be proactive. And again, I say that knowing that one of the underlying symptoms of depression is giving up, but remain proactive, especially in our healthcare system that's so overburdened, notably since COVID, especially. But if you fall off the treadmill, then the doctors are just going to continue on without you. So those are really three things. Accept it, remain strong, and be proactive.
That is phenomenal, phenomenal advice. Very simple, easy to understand. And I appreciate that very, very much. I'm going to throw a fourth one in there. The fourth one is, and I'm going to get you to, I'm going to get it back, the screen back to you here after I say it. The fourth thing is pick up a copy of Bruce's book, because there is a powerful tool right there. If you're not ready to come out to everybody about how you're feeling or whatever, sometimes getting some information in the head is the way to do it as well. And we have an incredible resource. Bruce, if you wouldn't mind, before I take us home here, could you please show the book again? And can you please plug where to get the book, your social media, anything like that? I know you're a speaker as well. And sure, so what are the best ways to get in contact with you regarding any of this stuff?
Sure. Thank you for asking. That's great. So it's available in a couple of different sources. Of course, number one is Amazon, right? What isn't able to purchase through Amazon today, but that's one place. I also have my own website. It's Bruce R. Ross. So there's an extra R in there, just beware. So Bruce Ross was taking that domain name, bruceross.ca, and has pretty good information about my journey. And you can buy the book through there as well. And also I'm going to go on a speaking tour soon. So another option to get a hold of me is my emails, Roderick, my middle name, Roderick, fine Scottish name, RoderickRoss@gmail.com. So that's rodercross@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. So that's really my plug, but that's really it. It's like, what can I say? I think it's a valuable read. There's no preaching. There's no judgment. No magic cures. It simply shares a journey of what it's like, truly like, from somebody who's lived it for 45 years.
Bruce, I can't thank you enough for taking your learning and transferring. I'm a big fan of the transfer of knowledge. I'm a huge fan of that. My life's purpose, I think, is to be a conduit of that. I don't know enough to transfer any knowledge, but I can certainly help those who have that knowledge transfer it. And that's what I think my role is with He Changed It here. Certainly we want to, as He Changed It grows and as our influence starts to become, the goal, Candy and her team, the goal is to become a worldwide influencer and thought leader in this area, taking some of the beautiful things that we find along the way and proclaiming them out as well. This is most certainly one of those beautiful things. Bruce, I cannot thank you enough for being a part of this. I'm certain our paths are going to cross again. Let's make sure that that happens. Let's manifest that it happens sooner than later. Thank you very much for your time, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me on your show and giving me the time to express my views. That's awesome. Thank you. I can't thank you enough.
Oh man, the gratefulness goes both ways. That's it. These things, I talk about how slippery time is when we do HeCast. It is the favorite time of my week. I hope it's also becoming the favorite time of yours. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to watch us or to listen to us. Again, download the He Changed It app. Check it on out. Search up. Go to HeChangeIt.com for all the details. If you like the podcast or the YouTube show, please subscribe. Please leave comments. Please like it and do all the things. Share it around, all of that stuff. The He Changed It overlords love that. And they don't give me heck when people are doing that. So I've got to keep asking for that. In the meantime, though, this has been another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something. You